In the latter half of the 20th century, researchers discovered an abundance of mineral riches literally sitting on the Pacific seafloor. But at up to 5 kilometres down, they're not easy to access, which is why they've largely remained untouched. But as the price of raw materials rises globally, these deeper deposits look increasingly more tempting to exploit. Apart from their depth, though, another problem is that these deposits are sitting amongst an incredibly rich animal ecosystem, and it's one that we know almost nothing about, mainly for the same reason that we've left the minerals untouched. But before the gold rush begins, Adrian Glover wants to see some basic science being done.
There's really a remarkable story, which is the story of the first attempts to explore the oceans, and particularly the high seas, for mineral resources, for metals such as cobalt, copper, nickel, which have always been of high value, but are now of even more value. We live in a time now where companies and contractors and industry are interested in exploring our high seas, collecting these minerals. It started in the mid-1960s when John Muir, as a geologist, published a remarkable book, which really is sort of a call to arms in some ways for industry to start exploring particularly a place in the Central Pacific where these small potato-sized mineral accretions, manganese nodules, were. And it was really from the beginning a geological enterprise: can we extract and bring these minerals up and use them to provide an alternative source from terrestrial mining? And now is a major exploration activity and potentially a major environmental issue.
Why is it a major environmental issue?
One of the sort of unique features of our deep oceans is that they are rich in biodiversity. The deep sea is rather a remarkable environment. Of course, it's very cold and very dark, very deep, separated from the surface oceans. We're talking about mineral extraction here in areas of depths of 4,000 to 5,000 meters. But the diversity is remarkably high. We don't actually know why. We know that it rivals, for example, actually tropical shelf environments in some cases. But tragically, the problem that we really have is the lack of actual descriptions of what those animals are. Remarkably, this has really slowed down the process of actually making assessments of environmental impact.
The cynic in me is wondering whether there is this extraordinary biodiversity there because we haven't got there to mess it up yet.
That's true to some extent. This is an amazing wilderness area. Our deep ocean abyssal plains are almost half the surface of the planet. If you took away the water, the average depth of the oceans is 3,800 metres roughly, and humans have essentially untouched. There are some fundamental processes. I don't say it's the absence of human impact, but there are some fundamental and remarkable processes which maintain that diversity that we still don't really understand. But this is an environment which is unique, and we are trying to understand that. And key to that understanding is actually taxon-specific information. What I mean is, what animal is there? What does it look like? What's it most closely related to? What's its evolutionary origin? What kind of ecological role does it play in an environment? We're talking about invertebrates mostly. There are vertebrates, there are fish down in these environments as well. Nothing is known about them.
So are you advocating then that before we allow further exploitation of this area, that we should advocate strongly that we go and study it properly so that we know what apple cart we might be upsetting, but equally how to minimise our impact?
I think it's fair to say that everyone has really been advocating that. And I mean that from the point of view of the regulator on the high seas, the International Seabed Authority, the contractors involved, governments that are involved. I haven't really met anyone in this day and age that says we should just go in guns blazing and ignore the environmental consequences. What I'm advocating is that we've missed a rather important step in the process, which is the taxonomic work to describe what that biodiversity is in those environments. It's a big challenge. We're looking at a large number of animals. There's no plants down there. We're in a dark environment, all of which are undescribed, and we need to know something about them. I don't believe that it's an impossible task. I think in a 5 years time scale, you could probably describe 1,000 new species from an environment such as the Central Pacific mining contracted areas. The problem has been gaining the traction with the regulators and the contractors and the governments involved to fund that research one way or the other.
Who should fund it, Adrian? Do you think this should be added on as a sort of surcharge? If you seek to exploit this environment, the first thing that's got to happen before you're allowed to do it is you have to fund a research expedition to go and catalogue and taxonomise what's in the area you're seeking to explore.
To be fair to the regulator and the governments that support that regulator, they do state that at the moment. So the regulations are such that only exploration activities are allowed. There is baseline data is to be collected. The costs are very, very high. And I think it is beholden on governments to help. You know, if they genuinely want to see industry move forward in a sustainable way, they also need to help that research, and particularly at a very fundamental level.
Have you had conversations with those various stakeholders, industry, governments, those people you are advocating to, in order to see how receptive they are to this argument?
I think they are receptive, and I think that that has been changing. I think what I've tried to make as an argument in the piece is a sort of slightly more nuanced argument than we just need to know more things before we go there, which everyone has been saying from almost every side of the argument for decades, to here is some very specific recommendations, which is an achievable goal. And the interesting thing about the taxonomic work is you don't actually need to do it over and over. Like, once you've described the fauna and have a reasonable handle on that, the job is done, you know, and then we can move on. The work can move on to those which are expert in, for example, monitoring of sites over time, you know, and people like me and the groups that work on the very fundamental biodiversity of a system, we can move on to something else. I think that has been missed in the arguments, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to publish this. And it was very well received by, you know, colleagues at the Seabed Authority, the regulator. This is exactly the kind of recommendations they need to move forward in this argument from the sort of arm-waving scientific argument that we need to know everything before we can do anything, to here's some very specific recommendations on how you can solve this particular biodiversity impasse.
Adrian Glover, he's at the Natural History Museum in London.